The old hymn says, when sorrows like sea billows roll. And for Hezekiah, he does all this good. He's praised for how wonderful a job he did. And then all of a sudden, what do we hear? Here comes Sennacherib coming down to Jerusalem, taking the outlying areas and the smaller towns, even though they were, some of them, fortified. The Bible says they were fortified. He took them. He captured them. Shortly after all this, Hezekiah experiences a disease that's destined to kill him. So one thing after another. Now, Syria is the most powerful nation. They are powerful. And so when we read in chapter 18 of the book of 2 Kings chapter 18, and you drop down to verse 13, 14. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against the fortified cities of Judah and seized them. Now he gets panicky. Then Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, now I want you to listen to these words. This is unbelievable that he would say something like this. I have done wrong. Withdraw from me. Hey, please, take your people, take back, go back, please, withdraw. I've done wrong. I haven't paid you enough. I haven't given you enough tribute. Withdraw from me. Whatever you impose upon me, I will bear. Well, you tell me what you want. I mean, I'll give it to you. Don't, please. He gets panicky all of a sudden. Here's a man that was trusting God. Here's a man that had done things for God. And now all of a sudden it's like, I've done wrong. You know the word here, I have done wrong, it's translated. Let me read you other translations. Here's the New Jerusalem Bible. Hezekiah, the king of Judah, sent this message to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, I have been at fault. Here's another one from the Young's Literal Translation. And in the Hebrew, this is exactly how you would turn it. I have sinned. The same word. I have sinned. As though the king of Assyria were like God. I have sinned. Turn back from me, please. Turn back. Whatever you put on me, I'll bear. The king of Assyria then laid on Hezekiah. Okay, so now we come to the next phrase. So the king of Assyria, what's he going to say? So Hezekiah's panicking. Hey, I'll send a message to you. I've done the wrong thing. I've done the wrong thing. I haven't paid you enough. I will. You tell me what you want. Now listen to what this guy wants. Listen to what this guy wants. The last part of verse 14 here. So the king of Assyria required of Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Now, how much is 300 talents of silver? Since the accepted weight of a talent of silver is 75 pounds, this would amount to 22,500 pounds of silver and 2,250 pounds of gold. Now, at the price of silver today, approximately, that would be $5,220,000 worth of silver and $43 million of gold. So he says, you know, I'll just tell me what it was. He gets panicky now. All of his trust in God, and it can happen to you. So let's not throw stones at Hezekiah. It can happen to you. Sometimes in the middle of your trials, in the middle of your sufferings, in the middle of things, you call upon other things. You don't know what to do. You want over here. You think, well, I'll go over here. And you don't, and you forget who's watching over you. You forget. So listen to verse 15. Hezekiah gave him all the silver which was found in the house of the Eternal. Now here's a man who had previously restored the temple. I'm going to clean this place up. We can't leave it like this. It's in shambles. I'm going to clean it up. We're going to restore it. Now he's going in and he's taking all the silver out of God's temple. And what is he going to do with it? And he gives it to the Assyrian king. He goes in and he takes all the silver, which was found in the house of the Eternal, and in the treasury of his own house, the king's house. He goes to his house. Give me the silver. What do we got? How much? We'll load it all up. We got to give it to him. At that time, listen to verse 16, even more. At that time, Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of the Eternal. We've got to shave all these. He's got to shave all this gold. We don't have enough. And from the doorposts, the pillars in the temple, we've got to shave all that gold off, which Hezekiah, the king of Judah, had overlaid and gave it. Now, he had made sure that the temple was restored, and now he's taking that silver, he's taking the gold, and he's giving it to the king of Assyria. Whatever happened to that younger Hezekiah, which we saw in 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 7, where it says, and the Eternal was with him. Wherever he went, he prospered, and he rebelled against the king of Assyria. You remember? He first rebelled. I'm not going to pay that. I'm going to rebel against it. And he went after the Philistines too. You think you can pay him off, right? You think you can establish a bully if you just pay him off, if you just pay the ransom, if you just, then he's going to go away. They don't go away. They don't go away. So what happens? The king of Assyria is not going to do anything. And all of a sudden, Hezekiah realizes that. He realizes they're coming anyhow. So now what does he do? Let's go back. You read two different accounts here. Let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 32, beginning in verse 2. Now when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had come and that he intended to make war on Jerusalem. He was coming back. See, he took the outlying cities. He took those other fortified cities, and they were in the way. He wants to come down, but he intends to come to Jerusalem. By the way, if you want a good take a good Bible map and you want to see where the king of Assyria would come, you look at the book of Isaiah, and I believe it's in chapter 10. You'll see it right here, chapter 10, dropping it down to verse 28. He came against Aath. He has passed through Migdon. This is the Assyrian. Now, I don't know that this is Sennacherib, but this is like a prophecy perhaps for the future. He's coming in, and he's going to be destroyed, and you'll see it, and it's Emmanuel's land. It's talking about the prophecy of Emmanuel. It goes right in after that into chapter 11, where he gets the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of, and then you kind of go into this millennial prophecy of chapter 11 of Isaiah. But in chapter 10, you got the Assyrian coming. He's coming, and he's coming toward Jerusalem. And look what it says. He's at Aath. He passed through Migdon. He's at Michmash. I've been at Michmash. I was there. It's there in or north of Jerusalem. He's at Michmash. He is coming down. He's gone through the pass. He's come to Geba. He's lodging there. He's come to Ramah. He's come to Gibeah of Saul, where Saul cry aloud for the voice of the daughter of Galim. Pay attention, Laish, wretched Anathoth. Where's Anathoth? It's just a couple of miles north of Jerusalem. Anathoth is where Jeremiah lived. That's his city. Pay attention, Anathoth. Madmen has fled. The inhabitants of Gibeon have sought refuge. Yet today he will halt at Nob. Nob is just the hill right over coming to Jerusalem, right there. He's coming from the north, but Jerusalem is the high place, but he's holding up at Nob. Today he will hold up a knob. He shakes his fist at the mountain of the daughter of Zion, the hill of Jerusalem. Now he's ready. The Assyrian is now shaking his fist at Jerusalem. Behold, the Lord, the God of the hosts, will lop off the boughs with a terrible crash. So it's a prophecy how God is going to protect Jerusalem from the Assyrian. And here they come. Now, here's Hezekiah. I got to scrape up enough gold. But now he realizes in 2 Chronicles chapter 32, he's coming anyhow. He intends to make war on Jerusalem. What does he do? He decided, verse 3, this is 2 Chronicles 32, verse 3, he decided with his officers and his warriors to cut off the supply of water from the springs which were outside the city. So they helped him, all these people. We're not going to give, he's going to come here, he's not going to get our water. They cut off the water. So many people assembled and stopped up all the springs and all the streams. So he started to assemble his people, which flowed through the region. Now, again, I'm going to ask you, if you're a betting person, are you going to bet that little Judah, little Jerusalem, is going to take on the Assyrian army? No. But we're not going to make it easy. Okay? He's coming. He's not going to get our water. We're going to cut off those springs. Okay? Again, he's mobilizing for war, right? So the people assembled. They stopped up the springs of the stream and they flowed through the region saying, why should the king of Assyria come and find abundant water? You know, we're not going to give him our water. He's not going to get it. He's going to have a hard time. Let me ask you, you're going to depend on God. You're asking God, help us. Is it wrong and contrary to faith to mobilize for an invasion? Is it wrong to take these steps to prepare, to get defensive? And as an example, if you trust in God, is it wrong to use your seatbelt? Is it wrong to lock your door? You say, God will protect me. Is it wrong to lock the door? Should you take precaution during freezing weather? God will protect me. Should you put on a coat? Is it a lack of faith to take these actions? Neither is it a lack of faith to mobilize. If it's not a lack of faith to put on a coat, it's not a lack of faith to mobilize for an enemy nation. And that's what Judah was doing. And Hezekiah had them there. And in verse 5, 2 Chronicles 32, verse 5, and he took courage and rebuilt all the wall that had been broken down, and he erected the towers on it and built another outside wall and strengthened the millo in the city of David. It made weapons and shields in a great number. Now you'll see this, I'm going to read that same verse 5 in the New English Translation. Hezekiah energetically rebuilt every broken wall. The Bible says, and I think King James may say, he strengthened himself. He all of a sudden said, no, we're not caving into this. I'm going to do whatever I can. Now, he's going to turn to God, you'll see, but he's going to do whatever he can. He energetically rebuilt the broken wall. He erected the towers on the outer wall. He fortified the terrace of the city of David. He made many weapons and shields. Now, the Hebrew literally says he strengthened himself. Did you ever have a time when you pulled yourself together? I got to pull myself together. Did you ever say, I got to strengthen myself. I got to get ready for this. I've got to do what I can. I got to do what I can. I can't just lie down and give it. I've got to take myself and get myself. And he strengthened himself. That's translated in the New English Translation. He energetically rebuilt every broken wall. He got himself going. This is the New Jerusalem Bible's translation of verse 5. This is 2 Chronicles 32, verse 5. New Jerusalem Translation says, acting with determination. He strengthened his will. He also repaired all the damaged parts of the wall and all the towers and constructed the second and the outer wall, strengthening the millo of the city of David and made great quantities of missiles and shields. He started making the missiles. Missiles mean the spears, the things you would throw, or darts. I think King James says darts, but they're more like the spears that you throw and the shields that you need to protect yourself. They start making weapons of war. The Revised Standard Version said he set to work resolutely and built up the wall and the millow. Okay? Now, the city of David, in Proverbs, you see it, the city that is broken down and without walls, by the way, he started building the walls. In Proverbs 25, verse 28 says, like a city that is broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. That is his temper, his way he thinks, the way his emotions. He has no control over his emotions. And for a while, Hezekiah, we can see he must have panicked. He had to panic. He sends a note to the king of Assyria. I've sinned. I've done the wrong thing. What do you need? Well, please do withdraw whatever it takes. How much money do you want? But then he realized that money is not going to save me. He's coming anyhow. I can give them all this money, just like we did in World War II, you know, before World War II, Neville Chamberlain, oh, let's let Hitler have this land, let's let him, and he'll be content if he just has this much, if he just has that much, if we could just pay him off, if we could just be nice to him. Yeah, like a city that is broken into and without walls is a person who can't control his spirit. So any nation that wants to win a war had better arm itself, right? And with adequate weapons. That's what you see here in the book of 2 Chronicles. Disarmament can lead to defeat. Once people think you're weak, then they come. In the book of Ephesians, for you and me, we better not disarm. What's the book of Ephesians say? Chapter 6, I just won't read the whole thing. In verse 11, use all the armor and weaponry that God provides. That's from the Complete Jewish Bible. Ephesians 6, verse 11. Use all the armor and weaponry that God provides so that you will be able to stand against the deceitful tactics of the adversary. We can't be without armor. We can't be unprepared. We've got to be prepared with our armor. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit in verse 17 of that same chapter, which is the Word of God. You're prepared. You got an offensive weapon, the sword of the Spirit. The rest are all defensive. Now, the Bible refers to this thing called millow, M-I-L-L, millow, I think it is. It's a filled mound. It was a mound, a rampart, interpreted then as a fortress. This is from the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. Something that fills the gap or a hole and has both meanings. Both meanings of a fortress, a rampart, something that fills the hole. It's the tower. It was a tower of solid stone standing on a terrace or raised platform. The millow was an element especially constructed for the defense of a naturally vulnerable spot. And it was well known in the time of Solomon. It was recognized by its own name. It was only done on the north side of the city, which lacked a strong defense. They put that millow on the north side because it lacked a strong defense. You see it referred to in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 9 and 10. So David lived in the stronghold and called it the city of David, and David built all around from the millow and inward. David became greater and greater, for the eternal God of hosts was with him. Where are you vulnerable? The city of Jerusalem was vulnerable on the north side. It had to start really getting defense. Where are you vulnerable? And in what areas of your spiritual life are you? You remember the story of Achilles? You know, His mother was, he wanted to be a total, strong, and invincible, unconquerable man. If his mother took him, and he was told by the, this is the Greek mythology, dip him in the water. So she took him as a little baby, and he'll be so strong and powerful, nobody, and every part of his body that the water touched, he will be invincible. He will not be able to be. So she grabbed him by his heel, and she dipped him in. The only part of his body that didn't get dipped in the water was his heel. And we talk about, that's Achilles' heel. And he later on in a war, a poison arrow hit him in that heel. And, of course, he was vulnerable. Everybody, think about it, everybody, you, I, every one of us have an Achilles' heel. Every nation has an Achilles heel. Every document has an Achilles heel. Every law has an Achilles heel. There's always an Achilles heel. We have to be aware of our Achilles heel. Now, before Hezekiah could exhort others to be strong, he had to be strong first, didn't he? He's now trying to exhort his people. He had to, and the Bible says he had to strengthen himself. He had to grab himself by the will and resolutely get out there and start doing something. You know, the book of Romans has a thing for a good example here. Romans chapter 2, verse 21. You therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that one should not steal, do you steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, through your breaking of the law, do you dishonor God? So we have to set the right example, don't we? We have to be the right kind of person if we're going to preach these things. Now let's come back to 2 Chronicles. Chapter 32, verse 6. He appointed military officers. Now he gets a hold of himself, right? He's strengthened himself. And now he's building these things. He's starting to build the weapons. He's starting to get everything going. He appointed military officers over the people and gathered them to him in the square of the city gate. And he spoke encouragingly to them. Let's bring all the bandmen. They spoke encouragingly. Okay. And here's what he said. This is encouraging. Be strong. Be courageous now. Don't fear now. Don't be dismayed. Don't get afraid just because the king of Assyria is there. Don't be because of all the horde. When you see a big an army, don't let that scare you now. Don't start melting out here, you know. And he's telling them, don't fear. Don't fear all that horde that is with him. For one, the one with us. Now this is a verse you need to put down. For the one with us is greater than the one with him. The one with us is greater. They're going to walk. They're going to look up. They're going to see an army so vast, so well equipped. They're going to like, oh my, you know, we've got a few soldiers here. We've got up the look at the size of this army. And it's easy to melt when you look only at them and you don't look up here. It's easy to melt. Don't be dismayed, because the one with us is greater than the one with him. With him is only an arm of flesh, but with us is the eternal our God to help us, to fight our battles. And listen to what the people did. And the people relied on the words of Hezekiah, the king of Judah. Relied on them. You know, when Elisha was alive, he answered in 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 6. So he answered, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. So now let's pick it up in 2 Kings chapter Chapter 18, dropping down now to verse 17. Then the king of Assyria, then this king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabbaris and Rabshakeh and from Lachish to the king Hezekiah. Now he sent some of his top military people. King of Assyria is still back in Syria, Sennacherib's there, but he. So they went up and they came to Jerusalem, and when they went up, they came and they stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is in the highway of the Fuller's Field, where they used to, you know, the Fuller's Field where they did the cloth and on the rocks. They were like a rocky area and they could wash the clothing right there. When they called to the king Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and the and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph the recorder, came out to see them. So they came out. So Hezekiah sends his top people. Then Rabshakeh said to them, "Say now to Hezekiah, go tell your boss, thus says the great king." Who's the great king? Well, the king of Syria is the great king. They've now really come on. Now, this says the great king, the king of Assyria, what is this confidence that you have? Now, all of a sudden, you know, the people are acting right. What did the people do? They believed Hezekiah. They believed that God was stronger than them. The one on our side is bigger and stronger and greater than the one on their side. So they believed Hezekiah. What's this confidence you have, they say. How come you guys are feeling so confident? Because most people, their hearts melt when they see the Assyrian army. You say, but they are only empty words, I have counsel and strength for the war. Well, now, on whom do you rely that you have rebelled against us? In other words, they know, they've cut off water, and they know what's happening. They see the fortresses. They see the people are starting to do a little bit here and a little bit there to arm themselves, to make missiles, to get the things built up, to build that rock area of Millo and all that. Now, behold, you rely on the staff of this crushed reed. Now, he thinks that Judah is sending down to Egypt to get Egypt's. You rely on this crushed weed, even on Egypt, on which if a man leans on it, it will go right through his hand and pierce him. You know, Egypt is such a bad staff. If you lean on it, instead of helping you lean on it, it'll just be like a sword, goes right through your hand and pierces you. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who rely on him. But if you say to me, we trust in the eternal our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away? Now this is how dumb they were. They did not understand Israel at all. They did not understand. They thought when Hezekiah destroyed all these high places, that they were high places for the eternal God. No, they were high places for Asherim and for Baal and all that. And he said, well, he's taken away all these high places. And has he said to Judah and to Jerusalem, you shall worship before the altar in Jerusalem? Are you only going to worship in one place, one altar in Jerusalem? Is that what Hezekiah is telling you? How are you guys going to win if you've destroyed all the altars? Now, therefore, come. Make a bargain with my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give you 2,000 horses, if you're able, on your part, to set riders on them. You know, you guys don't even have 2,000 people who can ride horses here. I'll give you 2,000 horses if you make a bargain with us. Now then, can you repulse one official of the least of my master's servants? Can you guys even take on one if we send one guy up here? And are you going to rely on Egypt for chariots and horsemen? Have I now come up without the Eternal's approval against this place to destroy it? I mean, you're going to rely on Jehovah. You're going to rely on him, and I've already come here. Well, what did he do for you? He hasn't stopped me. I've come up here without the Eternal's approval against this place to destroy it. The Eternal said to me, go up against the land and destroy it. Now, he's just making a lie because he's trying to destroy their faith, right? God said to me, destroy this land. Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah and Shebna and Joah, said to Rabshakeh, "Speak now to your servants in Aramaic." We understand Aramaic. "Speak in Aramaic, for we understand it, and do not speak to us in Judean in the hearing of the people who are on the wall." There are a lot of people looking over. Okay? They're meeting. They have this meeting right in the city, in the town, city. And he comes to meet them, and they got all these people. What's going on? And here comes these representatives of the Assyrian army. What are they saying? So now, in order to stop the melting the hearts of the people and destroying their faith, he's saying, "Hey, speak to us in Aramaic. We understand Aramaic, but don't speak to us in our common language. All these people are going to hear you. We don't want everybody hearing this." Rabshakeh said to them, "Has my master sent me only to your master and to you to speak these words, and not to the men who sit on the wall, the men who are doomed to eat their own dung and to drink their own urine with you?" Right away, those words are designed to strike fear in all those people. We should surrender. I guess we should, look at the army. We have everything is on their side. All the power is there. And he's really going after the words of Hezekiah. And Rabshakeh stood and he cried out with a loud voice in Judean. He wants all these people to hear it. "Hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus says the king, do not let Hezekiah deceive you. For he will not be able to deliver you from my hand." That is true. You think Hezekiah and all the people that were in Jerusalem, if it just on human strength, could deliver? No, absolutely not. So he was telling the truth. "Nor let Hezekiah make you trust in the eternal." Now he's crossed the line, see. You can say about Hezekiah, don't let Hezekiah's words, and don't let him make you trust in the eternal. Now you have stepped over the line, saying, "The eternal will surely deliver us, and this city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make your peace with me and come out to me and eat each of you of his own vine and under his own fig tree." That must have been a common Middle Eastern, Assyrian, Akkadian, Judean, Arabic kind of statement. Everybody wanted to have their own vine and fig tree. It means you were self-sustaining, you had your own food, you had peace, and you could eat it. You'll have health. "Your own vine and fig tree, and drink each of you the waters from his own cistern, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land with grain, a land with new wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of olive trees and honey, that you may live and not die." This is what in psychology we refer to as the carrot and the stick, right? The stick was told first. These men are going to eat their own dung and drink their own urine. They're going to die. On the other hand, you can surrender to us. All of you will have your own vine and fig tree. Then we'll just deport you out of here to a land very much like yours, in which you're going to have grain and bread and olive trees, and you're going to live and not die. You're going to have a wonderful thing. But do not listen to Hezekiah, because he misleads you. He's deceiving you, saying, "The Eternal will deliver us." Don't listen to him. He comes up with a very good argument. "Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered his land from the hand of the king of Assyria?" Look around. That nation had gods. You think their gods saved them? They went down. Look over here to this nation. Did their gods save them? Nope. And you think your God's going to save you? So he says, "Where are the gods of Hamath in verse 34. And Arpad, where are the gods of Sepharvaim and Hena and Iva? Have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Who among all the gods of the lands have delivered their land from my hand, that the Eternal should deliver Jerusalem from my hand? It takes a strong belief and faith against these words to hold a faith of any kind against these words in this world is miraculous. But the people who were silent answered him not a word. For the king's commandment was, and here's what Hezekiah told all the people, don't answer him. Just listen. Don't answer. Don't try to make the argument. Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and the son of Asaph the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn and told him the words of Rabshakeh. And when Hezekiah heard it, chapter 19, when Hezekiah heard it, what did he say? He tore his clothes, covering himself with sackcloth, that entered the house of the Eternal. Wow, he's going into that temple, which had now been stripped of its gold, now depleted of its silver. And then he sent to Eliakim, who was over the household with Shebna and the scribe and the elders and the priests, and covered the sackcloth. He said, go to Isaiah the prophet. Then they said, thus says Hezekiah. They come to Isaiah the prophet. Thus says Hezekiah, this is the day of distress, of rebuke, of rejection, for the children have come to birth and there is no strength to deliver. We don't have any strength. Perhaps the Eternal your God will hear all the words of Rabshakeh, whom his master, the king of Assyria, has sent in to reproach. What's the name of God? It's a four-letter name, four letters. Yud-Heh-Vah-Heh. It means the ever-living one. I am that I am. I will be what I will be. I am the ever. And what do these people say to Isaiah? He's come, his master, the king of Assyria, has sent to reproach the living God. The living God. And will rebuke the words which the Eternal your God has heard. Therefore, we offer up a prayer for the remnant that is left. So the servants of the king of Assyria came to Isaiah. Isaiah said to them, thus shall you say to your master, thus says the Eternal, do not be afraid because of the words that you have heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. And God takes that personally. Behold, I will put a spirit in him so that he will hear a rumor. Now, this is Rabshakeh. Rabshakeh is going to hear a rumor. He's going to return to his own land, and I will make him fall by the sword in his own land. He's going to fall. He's going to die. Somebody's going to kill him. So we're going to see God's great intervention, God's superpower. And what does God do? He sends an angel, right? We know the story. You already know what I'm going to read. He kills 185,000 of that army. Devastates the Assyrian army. And what happens when you devastate the Assyrian army? Well, their rival, the Babylonian Empire, is going to rise up and now become King Nebuchadnezzar and all that. They become the dominant. Before, Assyria was the dominant one up there in that Tigris-Euphrates area. Now, Babylon comes on. It becomes the powerhouse because Assyria went down. And it went down because God destroyed its army. And you'll see this taking place. Now, we're also going to take a look at a couple of other things. Hezekiah makes another very serious, deep, unlike him totally, error. Very serious. And we'll see what happens when Babylon comes down and says, oh boy, you got, you're healed, you got better. You remember, he got better of his disease. And what he got kind of deceptive. What are you and I supposed to do when we receive something from God, a blessing, a good thing? What are we supposed to do? Thank you, God. And we, and every thanks, when you thank God, it's a form of praising God. When you thank God, because you're acknowledging Him as the source, you're acknowledging Him as the power. We'll talk more about Hezekiah. He survived it, but he really made some serious mistakes after this. This was a major mistake that he made, giving the king of Assyria that, but he recovered from it. He realized it's not going to, paying him off is not going to do it. I'm going to turn to God. How many times have you done something and realized, you know, I better turn to God? We'll talk more about Hezekiah in our next sermon.